You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Claws, Bones, and Taylor Swift. Hey everyone, I'm your host Sean Chandler, and you're listening to Your Program Is Your Ticket, a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. Today's guest is Evan Nyden of Candle House Collective. Evan is part of my new Theater Is For Everyone series, where I'm interviewing theater artists outside of the major locales and influences to give them a chance to be heard, discuss their work selection and production processes, while touching on their triumphs, challenges, and misconceptions. Widely considered the pioneers of the remote immersive movement, Candle House Collective creates theater experiences that put audience members, often one at a time, at the heart of the story. Surreal, psychodramatic, and heartfelt, Candle House Collective's deeply interactive performances plunge audiences worldwide into high-agency encounters. I was fortunate enough to experience their most current production, Claws, in between recording Evan's interview and this introduction, and I gotta tell you, it was one of the coolest, most intense, immersive theatrical experiences I've ever encountered. It was me on the phone with a sensationally believable actor being completely pulled into this intense scenario. And more than once, I've gotten the creeps in the middle of the night over the final few moments of the experience. Keep in mind that our interviews are recorded at different times to optimize schedules, just in case the audio sounds different. I'm super excited, so let's bring them on. Hi, Evan, and welcome to Your Program Is Your Ticket.
Hi there. How's it going?
Going great. I'm so excited for this interview. I am really, really intrigued by this concept that you have, and I get to participate in it pretty soon. And I have a lot of questions, but I don't want to give too much away. So let's start with having, instead of me talking so much, let's have you talk, because I know that you're not going to give too much away, and I'll be careful of that during the interview. I promise. So let's start by having you introduce yourself to our listeners and telling us about Candle House Collective.
Yeah. So my name's Evan Nyden. I'm an immersive theater creator. I have been for a number of years now, in January of 2018, I created Candle House Collective. We describe ourselves as an experimental theater company specializing in immersive theater. And since 2018, we've been creating remote experiences, so remote interactive experiences for audiences, typically of one at a time. And it's sort of a form that we've really tried in its various incarnations, a form we've tried to sort of develop and perfect over the years. And we're continuing to do that. We started out with a 5 month long alternate reality experience called Last Candle ARX. It was 5 months for a group of participants. And it was one story over the course of 5 months, not something that ran for 5 months. It was one continuous story that they followed via phone calls, text messages, group forum, found footage, et cetera. After that, we started exploring more ticketed pieces that started out as 3 days and got shorter. And we landed on this short form format that Claws falls into. Claws is currently our longest running piece, and it's something that we just established as our first permanent installation, something that's going to be running for the foreseeable future with multiple performers. But overall, what we're focused on is creating immersive theater, interactive theater that is affecting and is truly interactive and can be accessed from anywhere. You know, that you don't have to be in New York or California or Chicago or London to see. That you have a, you know, with Claws, for example, that you have a quality immersive horror experience in the palm of your hand.
Wow. And I love that, because that really fits in with the series that we're doing, which is A Theater Is For Everyone. This is something that if you have a cell phone, now let's face it, who doesn't have a cell phone? I mean, my 5-year-old nephew has a cell phone. So it, of course, we don't want a 5-year-old nephew on a call like this, but if you have a cell phone, you can have this theater come to you. You can have this great, cool, kind of scary, like suspenseful experience. How did you come up with this concept? Was it you? Did a bunch of people get together? How did it start, and how has it evolved?
With that 5-month long alternate reality thing I mentioned, Candle House just started as me and my cell phone. That was the beginning of it. And gradually other people got involved, and other people sort of became a part of the team, but it was just me at the beginning. And it came from, you know, immersive theater in general exists at the intersection of a lot of my interests, the things I grew up on, you know, traditional folk storytelling, The Twilight Zone, the original Rod Serling, haunted houses, alternate reality games, all kind of intersect, and then theater, of course, all kind of intersected at this thing, immersive theater. And then in terms of phone calls, I've always loved audio dramas, you know, especially of the era of something like The Twilight Zone, you know, the audio dramas from the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, the conveying, and, you know, podcasts now are kind of our modern day radio dramas, but what they all, the art of that is something I've always found fascinating, that you can close your eyes, which is something that, as theater goers, I feel like are relied upon a lot. You can close your eyes and have this thing conjured in your head. And in a way, it's a little closer to the experience of, you know, those radio dramas are a little closer to maybe the experience of reading a really good novel or something, because you're filling in the blanks in your head in a way and specifically the visuals. So you can create a visual in your head that really speaks to you with those sorts of things. And when that intersects with something like interactive theater, which, when done well, really pulls you in and makes you a part of the story, it allows you to completely toss your disbelief to the side and really, really invest yourself.
It's so cool. I love it. It reminds me a lot of, and this is what I can sort of like relate to it with or from, about three or four years ago, I went to a Broadway show. It was a one person show. I think it was called The Experience, and it was about this guy who, it was true. He wrote about something he did. He went to like the Congo and had this like crazy trip, and everyone listened to it on headphones.
The Simon McBurney piece, The Encounter.
Yes.
I loved it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I just remember at one point I just stopped watching him. I just closed my eyes. And honestly, it was like my imagination. Once I closed my eyes, my imagination just completely went wild with it. And that's kind of what it reminds me of. It's like, and sometimes our imaginations are way more frightening than what can appear in front of us or what we're thinking or what we're anticipating. But that's sort of what I thought of. That was one of my original, like, oh, wow, that reminds me of that great play that I saw.
I feel like sound is something we rely, you know, sight is a lot of people's first line of everything, not just defense, first line of sensory input. You know, most of us look at things first, but, and hearing is usually reserved for times when we can't see or when something's behind us. You know, it's reserved for things that are outside of our typical frame of awareness. But take away the element of sight and you know, and focus on hearing. And all of a sudden this thing that's used to just focusing on either, you know, threats or, kind of ASMR tingles, you know, that sort of thing. Music, you know, really strong physiological or emotional responses. When that's what you're zeroing in on, I think the encounter is a great example. It can conjure really uniquely strong feelings, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a little, like a little sample of Claws on your website that I mm-hmm. listen to, and I'm kind of a fraidy cat. I really am. And I'm afraid of like jump scares and things like that. And I think that, like I just said, our imaginations are really what can like really amp up the experience. And I think a lot of that has to do with just the waiting, the suspense that's involved. And there's another thing. I'm like showing you all my research, like right off the bat, right up. I'm front loading you with research here. So have you ever heard of McCamey Manor?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now you're not a haunted house, and this is like a crazy, wild, insane experience. It's nothing like what you have. I mean, yours is very controlled, and you, I feel like I'll be comfortable when I'm doing it. McCamey Manor. The only reason why I brought it up is because it's a haunted house that was so crazy in California, they had to move it to Tennessee. And this guy has put together this horrifying, like torturous kind of haunted house that you go through. But I remember him saying, like, you have to get a physical. You have to be 21 and over. You have to sign like a 20, 40 page, something like that release. And what he was saying was, we make them wait all day long. And really, that has done 90% of our job for us, rather than just going directly in, because they're anticipating it in their mind and their imagination is like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen before they even get in there. Now, do you feel like there's a little bit of that in the way that you're setting people up to for what they'll expect?
Yeah, I can't really speak to any kind of comparison with you know, something like McCamey Manor, but the idea of anticipation in horror is absolutely a part of it. You know, in the minutes and hours waiting for your phone to ring, waiting to see no caller ID pop up on the screen, which is a little unsettling in and of itself. You know, it's back to that thing of your mind kind of running away with itself without any visual input. You know, and in this case, without really any input, you're just the knowledge that this thing is coming, the knowledge that your phone is going to ring and you're going to be tipped head first into this sort of isolated and kind of thrilling scenario, is, you know, we've had participants describe the waiting as, you know, just sitting there staring at their phone, waiting for it to ring, even though they know their experience isn't for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, 2 hours. So yeah, I think the anticipation is a big part of it, but something I'm proud of Candle House a lot of the time, and especially with Claws, is that the anticipation is one thing, and what you get is quite another. And we pride ourselves on not necessarily delivering exactly what it is you're scared of. We're going to give you something else to be scared of instead.
Which makes me double scared by now. That's actually very, very clever. So you kind of switch it up at one certain point throughout the experience, right?
Yeah. Well, whatever that looks like. I mean, whether it's I won't get into specifics, but that takes a lot of different forms. The fact is, I think some of the anticipation just comes from, this is going to happen over a phone call. What in the name of God have I gotten myself into? What is this going to entail? And learning the rules of the world and the rules of this form as you go, this sort of baptism by fire is part of it. Not, you know, only having a very limited understanding of, 'cause a lot of people seeing Claws, a fair amount of people have not even really experienced immersive theater before who were experiencing Claws. And thinking about, okay, it is theater, but I have to be not only involved, but it sounds like I have to be a kind of critical part of it, but I'm not playing a role, but I'm playing myself. I'm just being myself, but yet that's a critical part of the plot. It creates a feedback loop that's just that lets you sit in the anxiety until your phone rings, and then we sort of teach you as the piece goes along.
Oh yeah. I mean, I received an email that has, I'm not going to say what they are, but it's like a list of things that you're supposed to do beforehand. And I could just see myself like having my phone in my hand and like jumping a little bit as soon as it rings. Has anybody ever told you that they've done that? Like, oh, here it is.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the anticipation of it, definitely by the time the phone rings, you know, we've had people describe the feeling as they didn't realize they were holding their breath until they pick up the phone and speak for the first time. And then they realize, oh, wow. Okay. My face is turning red. I should probably. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's great. I think this is such a great, great project and really has rolled along at, I don't want to say an opportune time, but a good time when we need different types of theater that aren't as, you know, physically connected. By physically, I mean people in the same room because of COVID-19 and that. I did a series called Act Two Places that where I talked to a lot of theater companies, artistic directors, actors, and I asked them what they were doing to get through COVID-19. And a lot of people came up with some really, really, really clever, creative ways. I mean, like write in campaigns. And I mean, one particular company would send out postcards written by writers that they hired, and they'd get them returned from the audience. And it's kind of, I'm still having a hard time putting it together, but they would get them returned from the audience saying, we want you to write this. We want you to put this kind of character in. And this all went through like the US mail. There's people who had filmed a play and then they turned it into like a video experience. So, but this is what's cool about you guys is that you had this before COVID. You've been doing this for a long time. And I don't want to say fortuitous. That just sounds so crass and coarse. But it's a good time to have this kind of experience right now. Of course, anytime's a good time because, you know, you're a good theater company. So, I just wanted to say that. Do you have any thoughts on that? That my eight paragraph monologue there.
No, I mean, I think in, you know, starting when we did, it was something that wasn't really, you know, I think the response that people had was, oh, wow, you know, y'all came around in 2018. And then in 2020, the work, you know, remote work really became kind of necessary to the, and, you know, I don't always know how I feel about that because I think for some people or some places, I don't know about necessary, but it was important or helpful before COVID, you know, I mean, because not everyone is fortunate enough to be based in a place like New York that has, or California or Chicago, London, you know, I could, the list goes on. It's not just those four places, but not everyone is fortunate enough to be based in a major artistic metropolitan area where there's art happening every single day all around you in every possible form you can think of. And Candle House came about as, among other things, an attempt at a solution to that. That there's this thing that you can experience from anywhere, you know, and all you need is a phone. That's something that's always really appealed to me. So when COVID started and the 2020 quarantine happened, it just felt like a continuation of the work we were already doing. It's just that it was more critical to more people, because all of a sudden everyone found themselves in that situation. Everyone found themselves in the situation of having to, you know, nobody was in a major artistic area anymore because everything was shut down. So everything went remote, everything went online. And it was, you know, I know how challenging that was, and it was challenging for us too, but it was also really, it was really good and rewarding for us to already have this product that we could deliver to people, this theatrical experience that we could deliver to people, knowing that it worked and knowing that already having a reputation.
Outstanding. Now, to me, that speaks a lot to you and your team. I feel like you would need people who, if they're not technically writers, at least have some experience in writing. And also you as a leader. I think writers have to be a bit, they have to be a bit prophetic. They have to be able to anticipate what's coming up in the future. Not that you knew COVID was coming up in the future. That was for doctors to know. But unless you're a doctor and you knew, I don't know, I'm sorry. Anyways, I think that what you did is you said, there's something here. And there's a group of people here and here and here and here and here, and they need theater as well. And you looked at that and you saw that niche, and you, as a writer and a leader, went ahead and created it and gave it to them long before a lot of these other people did. And I think that that's great. I think that you and your team should pat yourself on the back for that. It's not easy to do. And I don't devalue anybody who does this, but it's not just, you know, okay, we're going to open up a theater ensemble and that's great, but it's different and it's risky. And it's risky at a time when it wasn't in demand as much. And that speaks heavily to your character as a leader. So I'll just say that. Now tell us about Claws, the actual story, the storyline of it, and what you can.
Claws is... It's a horror movie. You know, it's let me put it this way. For anyone listening who has seen a horror movie, you know, saw Friday the 13th, it's not really like a slasher film, but I bring that up just because it's one of the quintessential horror movies. But if you've ever seen a horror movie and found yourself yelling at the screen, you know, seen a character walk past all the keep out signs and found yourself yelling, maybe don't do that. Maybe don't walk past the keep out signs, and then something bad happens to them and you say, well, you shouldn't have walked past the keep out signs. You know, if you watch those kind of films and think, okay, they're making stupid decisions, obviously I could do better, we invite you to try. And that's what Claws is. It's it is, among other things, a chance to be a star in a horror film, and or a co-star in a horror film, and we'll see how you do.
So you mean all those times when I'm watching Halloween? By Halloween I mean Halloween from the 70s, because I recall seeing that first off. And I'm screaming at Laurie Strode to turn on the light in the houses that she's in, where she's walking around in the dark. Then all that is karmically going to come back to me. And it's like, hey, man, you think you could do it better? Put up or shut up.
It may not come back to you. You may be one of the people who could do it better. And, you know, Claws is, among other things, a good litmus test for that. How would you do in a horror movie? Come find out. How would you, and it also, you have this character who, you know, Danny, who's sort of the sole character in it, is in a very tense situation. He's looking for whatever help he can get. And, honestly, one of the things that really makes the piece work, it's designed to work pretty much across the board, but it, you know, and do what it needs to do. But one of the things that really, really brings it to the next level is when a participant comes with a degree of compassion you know, when they stop trying to be something, because the characters in a horror movie aren't trying to, you know, most of the time aren't trying to win a game unless it's Saw and they're literally trying to win a game. Most of the time they are struggling with themselves, with each other. You know, horror movies, good horror movies, a lot of the time are very personal, and Claws thrives off of that. The more of yourself you're willing to bring, the more you get out of it.
Wow. Okay. Okay, I have to ask this. This is very stream of consciousness, but what is your favorite horror movie?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It just came to my mind.
Oh, gosh. That's really difficult. It's not a movie, but I know I keep bringing up The Twilight Zone, but to me that's... There will never be horror like that, like Rod Serling's Twilight Zone, because it's horror that isn't immediately identifiable as horror. It's all these different situations where there's just something wrong or something slightly removed from reality, far enough away that we could completely write it off. You know, I love Nightmare on Elm Street as much as the next person, but I have to acknowledge watching it. I'm like, all right, it's horror fantasy. What something like The Twilight Zone does so well is it doesn't let you think that. It really superimposes itself over your reality. A more recent equivalent, I'm not sure if it's the same thing, but a more recent equivalent that I love is Ari Aster's body of work, Hereditary and Midsommar. Are both really good at taking these insane supernatural concepts and making them feel really uncomfortably material.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Is Toni Collette one of those?
Toni Collette is one of the leads in Hereditary. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I love her and I'll try to see everything that she's in, but I've read stuff about those two movies and it kind of, I don't know. Like I said, I'm a big Frady cat, so I'm just a little concerned that I'll be watching it and I won't be able to sleep for I believe it or not, I'm almost 60 years old and I still act like this. But yeah, I've heard that they're quite good as films and just like a freak out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Midsommar is, I think, brilliant because it's, you know, Ari Aster said, I'm going to make a horror movie in broad daylight, and you're going to be more scared than you are in 90% of other horror movies. Wow. Midsommar is more kind of a traditional horror film, but it does what it does really well and really uniquely. And Toni Collette is a huge part of that. I mean, watching her act in anything is wonderful, but especially in that is she's so disturbing. And the disturbing part of it is, she's playing a very real, they're all playing very real people, but her character is someone you feel like, you know, her. And that's the really concerning part is nothing about the dialogue is ever that affected. It all feels very natural in a really uncomfortable way, you know?
Wow. And you know, and someone like her, every time I've seen her in something, it's generally very different from the previous thing I've seen her in. So I am always confident that she's going to give a great performance. I've loved her since Muriel's Wedding. So because of Toni Collette and because of your excellent review, I will go back and I'll watch at least one. I'll watch the one with Toni Collette. Now that's Midsommar?
Hereditary.
Hereditary. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm writing it down just so I don't, because again, I'm almost 60, so I forget things sometimes, but yeah, she's terrific. And I agree with you on Twilight Zone. I mean, Twilight Zone, they're so smart, because I often say that people who, I think I've said this a couple times in the last few shows, but the best filmmakers, the best dramatists are the ones who create a psychology in your mind while you're watching the film. And you don't necessarily know what's happening. The best way I can describe it is, and I sort of realized it too, was in the movie Slumdog Millionaire. I remember watching that movie. I saw it at the theater too. And I just remember thinking any one of those characters could be in danger at any point during that film. They could be killed. They could fall off of a giant unbuilt high-rise building that they were working on. They could get hit by a train. They had me wondering, and that's to me is really smart, obviously Academy Award winning direction. But I think that the Twilight Zone did that great, because they'd have us up until like the last 30 seconds of the show. And then all of a sudden we're like, oh my God, you know, just genius.
A friend of mine describes the Twilight Zone. There are certain episodes that really have especially the earlier episodes tend to kind of have a morality skew, you know, between the gambling ones and the toy maker and the devil and things like that. You know, those I think were more morality plays, but as it moved on, a friend of mine describes the later seasons as each episode basically says, hey, here's this situation. Would that be fucked up or what? And there's no real resolution to a good portion of them. It just gives you a situation and makes you sit with it during and after. And it's really hard to get those out of your head. It's, you know, some of them are kind of earworms and they stick around, and some of them stick around for me even now. And it's that's one of the things I love about it. I feel like horror doesn't have to fit any of what we typically define it as, you know, either jump scares or high octane material or gore or even the things we define these days as psychological horror. You know, Twilight Zone was rarely what we would consider now horror, but it's still more unsettling than a lot of horror movies I've seen.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, you know what my next question is going to be, right? Hmm. What's your favorite episode of Twilight Zone?
I do not have a good answer for that question.
Really?
No, you know what? I lied. Oh my God, I'm forgetting the title. The senior citizens becoming children. You know the one I'm talking about. No, actually I lied.
I didn't know that episode.
The man who all he wants to do is read. All he wants to do is read. And the sort of nuclear apocalypse happens, and he's in a safe under the library, or a vault under the library when it all happens. I think it's under the library. And then he, you know, his wife hates him for reading, and everybody kind of is mad at this guy for letting the world pass him by. But all he wants to do is sit there and read. And he finally gets to do that. You know, everyone else is gone and he's just here in this library of books, and he just gets to read, and he trips and breaks his reading glasses. Wow. At the end of the episode. And yeah, it's so, you know, that's definitely one of my favorites.
Wow. That's, you know, I'm a little more like, I have two favorites. Of course, I love Talking Tina. Talking Tina is great. Isn't it Vic Tayback? Or no, it's Telly Savalas who plays the man who's trying to kill this doll. And it doesn't work. If anything, it works against him. And then there's this other episode where these kids have these horrendous parents that are always screaming at them, and they dive into a pool and they come up in a pond somewhere else. And they meet this little old aunt who bakes cakes and has her hair in buns, and this lady, this old aunt, basically keeps these kids from these horrible parents. So I think those are my two favorites. But I bet you anything, if we both sat there for like a couple minutes, we'd go, oh, well, what about this one and this one and this one?
And so listing the entire season,
the whole catalog. Series,
right, because they're all – there were very few misses on that show, if any, on the original.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. I could always get something out of an episode. So
Also, just, you know, before the very first episode ever, the town, and it turns out to be the military thing, but the town that's still, there are still signs of everybody having just been there, but the entire town is empty and it's this one guy trying to find someone in it. It was the very first episode. That one was the perfect setup for what the entire series was going to be, because again, it was never necessarily scary, but by the end of it, you were kind of having this sort of floor fall out of your heart, because just watching him try and find someone and thinking, what if that were me? You know, that's a nightmare I've had, waking up and the rest of the world is empty. You know, it's a really unsettling concept. I'll stop talking about Twilight Zone now, but
you know. I'm trying to remember which one it was, but I'll look it up. I'll look it up on Wikipedia, or I don't know, whatever trivia page they have for Twilight Zone, which I'm sure that there are millions of them. Yeah. But I'm blanking on that one. I know that there's been a couple where somebody wakes up and the whole town is either gone or everything's weird or they're not part of it. And the floor fell out of your heart, by the way, is a great, great, great name for an album. Just so you know, in case you ever want to cut an album, you can call it Floor Fell Out of Your Heart. And then, sorry, I'm just being silly. Don't pay any attention to me.
I'm sure, you know, if on the off chance Taylor Swift is listening, there you go. There's your next one. Yeah.
Oh my God. Like she needs more song ideas and more money. Don't put that in her ear.
She's fine.
Yeah. And Taylor, just so you know, Taylor Swift is not listening to me. But you know, I listen to her a lot. I think she could return the favor.
Return the favor, right, yeah.
Right, I mean, come on. She can listen to my podcast, and she could book a show with you, damn it. Oh, Tay-Tay, what are we going to do with you? And now talk about your production process once you've, like, created the story, written the scripts and outlines. Is it a script, or is it an outline, and then followed, or how does that happen, and then what happens after that?
It really depends on the piece. I mean, I'll get into Claus specifically in a second, but the scripts have looked really different depending on what the piece is and what it calls for. You know, I mean, and to a lot, you know, varying levels of specificity, because sometimes you have something that's a very linear story. Like there was a piece we did called Good Morning that actually, do you know William Humans, Bill Humans?
I do. I've interviewed him.
Yeah, he was in Good Morning when we did it. He played he was sensational, like he is in everything. But it was this 80-minute telephone piece for a single audience member. And it was an episode of a radio show for this little fictional town in Ohio called Jubilee. This little morning show. And what starts out is this idyllic picture of this beautiful little, you know, picturesque little Midwestern town slowly disintegrates into something altogether else. And that piece, because it was a radio show, was very largely scripted with moments that were not. Whereas something like Claus is less scripted because, you know, there's so many different directions it can go. And there are parts of it that that are kind of not necessarily scripted, but prepped in a certain way. But honestly, to be real with you, the moment a participant gets on the phone, it all flies out the window anyway, because they are such a huge part of the experience, you know, and what they say and contribute and how much they say and contribute really informs what happens in the piece. So if they say and contribute nothing, there is still a foundation. There's still a show to experience. You know, and even the minimum that is that is still, I think, plenty fun. But the more you contribute, like I said, the more you bring of yourself, the more the piece is going to turn into something that no one's ever going to experience but you.
Hmm. Okay. See, you're building up that suspense. You're creating that psychology in my head. And so it's just building and building. And I'm just, I'm going to be a mess before February 4th and probably on February 4th. So prepare for that. By the way, if anybody's interested, I don't know the number, but I've interviewed Bill Yeomans for an episode on a play that he acted in called The War Party. So you can go back and listen to him on that. And I think I want to say that I think I saw him on I went over the weekend to see To Kill a Mockingbird. Mm. And I think he's in that. Well, it's
close. I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Yeah, because yeah, I was like, I know this guy. He's I interviewed him. Very, very nice.
One of my favorite voices on an actor is Bill Yeomans. There's nothing like it. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, and he played Dr. Dillaman in Wicked for a long time. A long time. He's one of the longer Dr. Dillamans. But yeah, he works a lot. He works a lot. I could see why too.
Yeah.
Very,
yeah.
Very good. Excellent. By the way, that production that I saw of Kill a Mockingbird was great. Filled with understudies, including like I think Bill filling in for someone else, and we saw the understudy for Greg Kinnear, and it was great. Just FYI, everyone, that's a great, great show. Even if you're not seeing, you know, the star that they put in there. So just a little sidebar there. What are some of the misconceptions of immersive theater? What are you constantly having to explain about the concept, if at all? Something you always have to clear up all the time.
I mean, I'll start with our form in particular. You know, the biggest hurdle the first couple of years, really before COVID rolled around, was explaining what telephonic theater, remote theater actually was, because it wasn't really a thing yet.
Right.
Explaining that we did pieces over the phone, the amount of people I had kind of look at me sideways and say, "So phone sex?" And that's still something I find myself explaining, because even though there's been such a huge kind of advent of remote theater, virtual theater, distance theater, the idea of theater over a phone call is still, I think, a little novel or confusing to people. And especially because I think there's a lot of telephone theater out there, like, 600 Highwaymen doing 1,000 Ways, where it's more of an interview type thing. It's more of a facilitated conversation between you and another audience member. And that's, I think, easier to explain than, you know, you're on the phone and it's a theatrical piece with a character that you're engaging with. But yet you're playing yourself. You're not playing a character. You're just being yourself. It is a bit more difficult to explain. And then with immersive theater in general, you know, I mean, the challenge is always, really honestly, one of the most challenging demographics of people to explain immersive theater to are theater lovers, you know, traditional theater lovers. Absolutely. Not all the time, but I found that, in 75% of my experience, that's been the case, not because they're not willing to hear it. They really want to, and they really want to understand it. It's just a matter of the more I think of a cemented idea you have of what theater is, it's a mold that gets harder and harder to break. And you know, there are experimental festivals out there that are doing that work as well. But even then, you know, immersive theater is a whole neighborhood away from even that. Mm-hmm. And it's something that a lot of the time requires a basic rearrangement of one's definition of theater. Because there's so many different kinds of immersive entertainment out there, and very little of it conforms to what is to be expected from sitting in a seat and watching a proscenium show. Hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Do you ever make comparisons? I would consider immersive theater something like I don't know if you're familiar with. I think it was called Tamara. It was a show that was in Los Angeles because my husband David and I lived in Los Angeles up until 5 or 6 years ago. And I had a friend who was in this, and you go from room to room to room. It's now called, there's another production. It's the McKittrick Hotel.
Sleep No More.
Sleep No More. Yes. Thank you. Where you go and you sort of drop in on all of these situations. Is that, would you say that that's immersive theater like yours, or it's a different type of immersive theater?
It is absolutely a different type, but immersive is a big, big, big term. Pieces like Tamara and Tamara really is in my opinion where it all came from, really, in terms of immersive theater. I mean, Sleep No More is largely considered the grandfather of the industry as we know it today, but that wouldn't have existed without Tamara. And Tamara, I wouldn't call that immersive. I would call it more site specific or site evocative, is a term I've heard used, but you know, it paved the way for something like Sleep No More, which does have interactive elements, which has, truly a sandbox functionality where you can go wherever you want. You can touch things. You can eat the candy from out of the candy shop. It is absolutely immersive theater, but what we do is very different because Sleep No More is fundamentally environment forward. And I think a lot of the stuff that Punch Drunk, the company that created it, does is environment forward. You know, they build these incredibly detailed worlds. And then aside from that, they're sort of a dance company. So those two things combined create this surreal, often kind of dark, high art Disney World type thing for you to get tossed into and wander around. But you're more of a fly on the wall in those kinds of pieces. In something like Claws, the opposite is true. You are at the dead center of the story, and every action you take is going to affect the world around you. It's not, and it's not resetting regardless of what you do. It is there dependent on what you do. We're there for you. We're there with you. You know, it's one-on-one to do that, to create something for you, around you, with you, that you can kind of hang on to for a really long time.
Now, do you rehearse the team towards that end?
Yeah. Yes. The emphasis in preparing this kind of work is knowing that there is no preparing this kind of work. It's, we can create. One of our big, our big tenets of safety and character and environment, you know, that's all building that we do. And a lot of the rehearsal process is just building. And even with each actor for Claws, each actor playing Danny has a different take on the role in the world. And that gets developed through a shared kind of devising informed process. But in terms of just performing it, baptism by fire is the only way. You know, you're never going to fully understand this work until you do it yourself. And that's something that's really, that sounds, you know, intimidating, but I think is ultimately really valuable because it allows for a degree of freedom on the actor's part. It allows them to really, really make the role their own.
Are you willing to tell me how you audition people for this? Or is that something that needs to be like, you have to spring it on them just to see if they can respond the way you need to?
What I can say is that is what we look for. And actually, we're currently casting, as of the recording of this podcast, we're casting more performers for Claws. I'll send you the link for that. But the thing we really, really look for is adaptability and a willingness to play. Mixed, of course, with a desire to, in a case like Claws, you know, it's a horror film. And to make a horror film, you do have to have that drive to spook people, at least a little bit. That's why people act in immersive horror, haunted houses, that kind of thing. And that combined with an adaptability that can come from people with improv experience really tends to come from people with TTRPG experience, like Dungeons and Dragons, Dungeon Masters, that kind of thing. You know, people who Dungeons and Dragons is a tabletop role-playing game, TTRPG. Oh. I think that's the acronym for it. Yell at me in your comments, but for that. But that's something we look for a lot is, can you make this your own? You know, do you have enough of a sense in this specific way of who you are as a performer, and who you are when we take the visual away? Because that's something that trips a lot of people up, a lot of actors up, is taking the visual away, because so many people are so talented with their faces, and have such expressive and dynamic faces. And then you say, great, we're not going to be looking at that. Like, we don't care what your face looks like. We don't care what you look like. We just care how you sound. And that is a challenge that is also, you know, can also be very difficult to rise to. But the people who do, do this work. And it's why I think we have, you know, we have a particularly excellent ensemble as an immersive company, because we look for people who have creative identities in such a way that they feel comfortable manipulating the work that they're given and really, really bending it and breaking it around to make it their own.
That takes a lot of confidence.
Yeah.
To do that, because you're taking, you know, something you've been working on for a long time and then manipulating it. And that also takes a lot of confidence and security and you as a writer, because I know when I write something, I'm not crazy about people like doing it not the way I wrote it. But then again, that's part of the system, right? They have to be able to do that.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, well, you know, because the person, I mean, the person coming in, their scene partner has no script. Their scene partner has no, I mean, you know what the preparation looks like for this piece. It's really not that much. But you know, you have to be able to adapt around and really kind of find a way to love every different kind of participant. You know, that's really important. That's really important. Universal compassion, even in a horror piece, especially in a horror piece like Claws. You know, horror, the most unsettling horror, I think, comes from a place of kindness or compassion, you know, that feeling of, it's this sort of feeling that same friend of mine who I was talking about earlier describes as, you know, being in a hospital with a chronic or like a terminal illness and the nurses around you hoping you'll get better and knowing you probably won't. That's not necessarily the energy of Claws, but there's a certain intimacy and fundamental gentleness, sadness to that, that I think is a good example of what I'm talking about when it comes to compassion in horror.
Wow. I wouldn't have thought of that theory. I wouldn't have. I don't know if I necessarily would have understood that dynamic. But that could feel, well, I guess, yeah. I mean, it's death is the inevitable. Well, I guess it's part of the inevitable. So when these people are hinting towards that, there is something going on inside of you that is scary, even if it's just you looking into a mirror of what you're going to be soon enough.
Yeah.
Did I get that right?
Well, fear of death is, I think, is a combination of two things. It's fear of impermanence and fear of the unknown. And Claws exploits both of those. It, you know, in a, it obviously fear of the unknown. We talked about that earlier. And yeah, the impermanence thing, I'm not going to expand upon because I you have yet to do the piece. So afterward, you can let me know if you saw what I was talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to write down it. Fear of impermanence.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
By the way, I have another note here. 600 Highwaymen Doing 1,000 Ways is a great first single for Your Heart Fell Out. Wait, You Fell Out of My Heart or Out of the Bottom. What did you say before? I can't read my own writing. Tell me that phrase again. You fell out of the bottom of my heart.
Floor fell out of my heart or something.
The floor fell out of my heart. Okay. You know, we're just handing these hit singles to her, aren't we?
a little bit. It's either her or Benny Goodman. One of the yeah.
Wow, I don't think I would have ever thought to put those two in the same camp, but very smart. See, this is why you're the genius that you are. Taylor Swift, Benny Goodman. You've teamed them up to do something. What? I don't know. Cut the album. This is why you're going to be a billionaire maybe I'll create a TTRPG. Tabletop role-playing game. Maybe I could do that. No, I couldn't do that. I'm not that smart. That's something you can do. That's just like a side hustle for you, right?
I am sure there is a theater kid out there that's created a theater equivalent of Dungeons and Dragons. I'm sure that exists. I'm sure. Like a Broadway equivalent. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, they already made Broadway Monopoly, right? So Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a Ken Davenport thing, from what I understand. I saw him on the news, on the morning news, and he's like selling this Broadway Monopoly. And I thought, well, he's smart, Ken Davenport. I've been into some of his seminars, and he's a smart guy. If you could have three wishes for the development of Candle House Collective, what would they be?
Boy, I wish number one would be for, and I never imagined I'd be saying this a year or 2 years ago. Wish number one would be for Claws to kind of go, quote, mainstream a little bit, for Claws to be something that people know independently almost of Candle House, that becomes this thing that just exists in the fabric of the theater community that people do and maybe even come back to, you know, kind of a Sleep No More or Then She Fell type thing. Just a mainstay in the immersive community and hopefully later on in the theater community, among other things, you know, because I think of all the pieces that I've created, Claws is among those with the most universal appeal, because almost everyone likes horror, and even people who don't like horror like horror, you know. The nice thing about Claws also is we've had people come who were not horror fans in the slightest and were kind of just badgered by their friends to do it and came out saying, I hate horror and I really like this. Because, like I said at the beginning, we pride ourselves on never quite giving you what you expect and giving you something else instead. So that would be wish number one for sure, would be for Claws to gain a place in the community, in the theater community at large, and the arts community at large, maybe. Wish number two has to do a lot with, and this is maybe not excellently timed, but the potential of transitioning to in-person work. You know, I have a whole backlog of concepts ready to go for that. And, you know, because I think a lot of the logic that's applied to this kind of thing, a lot of the idea of phone call theater being accessible anywhere, immersive theater lends itself to that too. It allows you to create theater in places where there are no theaters or very little theaters. It allows you to create it in any space, inside, outside. And this sort of guerrilla approach that we started with the remote thing is absolutely something I'd love to carry over into in-person, because it's a way to contribute to turning theater or expanding the definition of theater, you know, that not only do you not have to be in a theater for it, you don't have to necessarily be in a dedicated space for it. A set is optional. Because anything can be a set as long as you do the work and craft the piece to make it that way. You know, this is not easy work to create, but a big wish of mine is to bring that same psychology of guerrilla theater and one-on-one immediacy and intimacy into an in-person context, which, you know, is not unheard of, but it's something that I want to do even more of because I love this kind of work. And then my last wish, honestly, is just community. You know, I made Candle House as an attempt to create a community. And that's something that's slowly appearing both inside our team and outside. It's something that it's an idea that I love, having a sort of artistic force, which in this case would be Candle House and the shows that we've put forth, at the epicenter of a larger community of people existing both among and independently of the work. Being united by a certain set of creative ideals or sort of sources of inspiration, and, you know, talking about the work and maybe creating work of their own. And it's just, I could describe it forever, but the general idea is just creating a community around something that can reach anyone.
I got the phrase "theater is for everyone" when I interviewed a couple of artists in Alabama who have a theater, a very small theater out there. It's where my sister lives in Daphne Fairhope, Alabama, which is a great name for a soap opera diva. I'm just saying, but I was out there and I was going to watch their production of 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And she, when I finished up the interview, the lady, her name is Robin Cohen, I was like, is there anything else that you want to say? And she looked at me and she said, like right at me, and she pointed at me. She said, I want to say this and I want you to hear it. Theater is for everyone. It's for everyone to create. It's for everyone to produce. It's for everyone to conceptualize. It's for everyone to direct, to act in, to write. What's going on in New York City is a teeny, itty bitty, teeny tiny fraction of theater. All over the world, people are doing different incredible forms of theater. And we don't want to cut that off at the knees just because we only think one way. And I just remember thinking, like, oh my gosh, you're absolutely right. And I think that you really just emphasized that. You've said, I'm going to do something and I'm going to do something different and I'm going to involve other people and maybe people who don't necessarily involve themselves completely in theater. And that's because theater is for everyone. So I think it's great. I think, what you guys are doing is really cool and fun. And it sounds like it's also edifying if I make it to the end of my call, because again, I'm a big fraidy cat, but I think it's wonderful. Now, before we go, please give our audience your social media information so they can keep up with you and your company.
So we are on Instagram at Candle House Collective and at claws.chc, Candle House Collective, follow for our work en masse. So anything we're doing. And then claws.chc is for Claws specifically. It's updates pertaining to that specific production. It's where we post all of these sort of little extras and appearances that we do. And it's also a good place to hear about newly released tickets. Speaking of newly released tickets, our website, candlehousecollective.com, is the best place, the best place to find out about new tickets. If you go to our ticketing page, candlehousecollective.com/tickets/clause, you can sign up for our waitlist, which is currently at the top of the page because clause currently is sold out, but tickets go on sale on the 11th of every month for the following month. So sign up for the waitlist and you'll be the very first to know when they do go on sale.
Very cool. That's awesome. I like to actually, when I go see a show of somebody that I interview, I actually like to buy a ticket. I feel like, well, you know, they're doing my show, so I should support them. And I couldn't. I had to take a comp. I did. And you were very, very nice to give me a comp. But in next show, I'll make sure that I'm on top of it. And I'll buy two tickets for that. And I'll gift the second ticket to someone else. Promise. Promise.
You can gift them. We have a mechanism for that. So go for it.
Wow. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. Evan, this has been such a great, great interview. I had a great time talking to you. It's neat. It's different. It's theater. And I know it's got to be like a lot of work, and it was a lot of work to set it up, but you're doing something that's just so specific and so, just so interesting. And, I just wish you like many broken legs in with Claws and with any of your future productions. And I just know that there's no ceiling for you, really. You're what you're doing. Mad respect, mad props and respect, as the kids say.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Again, Evan, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate you being on your program as your ticket.
Well, folks, the 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. Once again, a big thanks to Evan Niden of Candle House Collective. He was awesome. Get your tickets for this completely unique theatrical experience. Quick shout-out of props to Joel Myers, the incredible actor from the performance of Claws, which I attended. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket on the Broadway Podcast Network, who has honored me with a place on their incredible theater podcast platform. Broadway Podcast Network is all about creating an engaging, immersive, user-friendly experience where theater stories of all kinds can be easily found, shared, and enjoyed. Please visit them on my landing page at bpn.fm/ypiyt. That's bpn.fm/ypiyt. Your Program Is Your Ticket is also on Facebook at facebook.com, Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket, Instagram at Your Program Is Your Ticket, YouTube at Your Program Is Your Ticket, iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Podcast Addict, Podbean, Pocket Casts, Deezer, TuneIn, Listen Notes, and the UK-based theater platform Thespie. FYI, I appreciate all good ratings, reviews, and subscriptions. Folks, take a little time to visit theater websites and see what they have to offer. Watch their content, give them all great ratings and reviews, and most importantly, donate, donate, donate. As always, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, and remember, theater is for everyone.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.